I was 12 going on 13 the first time I saw a dead human being. It happened in the summer of 1959, a long time ago. But only if you measure in terms of years.
Sometimes dead is better. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 264 for the weekend of October. No, I don't know what it is. We're almost Halloween. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. My name is Scott Johnson.
Hello, Green.
I'm joined tonight on this show that's all about mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. Brian Pinky Swear Dunaway.
Skin it. Oh, hi. Normally, each week, I try to make you think with a humorous anecdote followed by a random thing.
Yeah.
Not this week. Instead, I'm going to depress those of you who saw this movie as a kid with a thought that occurred to me. More time has passed since this movie was released than the time that passed between 1959, the time period which this movie took place, and 1986, when the film was released.
Whoa.
Also, Scrote Leech makes me pass out every time.
Oh my gosh, don't never give me the numbers. Jeez Louise. That's freaky. Also with us, Randy Train Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Did I ever tell you guys about the time I had a job working as a psychological counselor in a small Oregon town in the late 1950s?
No, do tell.
Dude, wow. Every single person in the town, they were so messed up. Every single one. They needed counseling so bad. The only person I didn't have to work intensively with was this dog that lived out at a junkyard. Best therapy client ever. All he wanted was some nuts.
Our second nut joke. That's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude. Oh, by the way, I saw some pictures of Randy's other previous job working as a boom mic operator on Star Wars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saw that as well. Nice pink shorts.
Little pink shorty shorts.
Yeah, those look pretty good. Also with us, and finally, Brian Leech Wiener Ibbett.
I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to bring the trifecta.
Okay.
Boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom. What the heck is Goofy anyway? Boom, 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 boom. Pick one food to eat for the rest of my life? Cherry Pez, no question. Boom, 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 boom. The Next Generation's a really cool show, but did you ever notice that they never get anywhere? They just keep next generationing. Boom, boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. I want that to not end, the song bit. I feel weird that it's ending now.
I think we need to have two of those. I think we need to approach at least a couple of those questions sometime during the show. We need to have like a fireside kind of discussion about the things they talked on there.
Yeah, sure. That's not a bad idea. The movie is Stand By Me, and it's all about leeches on your scrote.
the very meat of the subject here.
Lack of a better term. Yeah, I know what you meant. It is Stand By Me, directed by Rob Reiner. That's Meathead from All in the Family. And he is famous during this time period for putting out some movies that are still considered timeless classics. Many people would lump this and Princess Bride into the same category of movie you can watch 20 years later and feel like it wasn't made that long ago. That's the general consensus out there. I'm going to agree with that, but we'll get to that nitty-gritty here in a second after we let Scott Fletcher have his say. Because I'm sure that when I push this button, it'll actually be his voice saying a thing that he's going to say now. So here it is. I push it. Scott Fletcher, take it away. All right. He's not really here. So now we come back and we say, oh, Fletcher, you freaking genius. You've nailed it again.
You know, I thought he was the body.
Yeah. So the movie Stand By Me. I saw it when I was younger, but I don't remember. I was in high school, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Right, 86. How old were you?
17, 16, right. 17, something like
that. Yeah, I was only 14. So it was right on for me.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah,
these kids are 12, 13, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Randy, where were you? You've never seen this. This is your first viewing.
Right. Yeah.
I was
October 9th, 2015.
Yeah. So that would have been yesterday.
Right. So I feel like the movie's a mixed bag. Mm. It's I can see why, you know, in 1986, someone would watch this film and go, oh, yeah, that's nice. That's fun. That's whatever. Mm-hmm. For me now, it's really not aged well.
Is part of the problem, because here's the thing. I don't remember a thing about it. That's the weird bit, is I remember a few things. I remember the leeches, and I remember the barfing scene, and I remember, you know, all the traumatic stuff.
Right.
But I don't really have a memory of much else, and when they found the body and how they did. I forgot how much Kiefer Sutherland's in this. For some reason, I used to have it in my head that he was the body. I don't know why that was the case.
That's funny. Yeah. I can see that.
So yeah. just a strange confluence of memories. And my kids heard me playing the movie while I was prepping for this, and Nick yells from like two rooms over, and he goes, what are you watching Sandlot for?
Yeah,
right.
It does feel like a Sadlot.
Yeah, it's like a Sadlot.
It is a Sadlot.
Yeah, I was describing it as Sad Goonies versus Lost Boys.
And I think the problem is, for us who saw this when it originally released, this movie was such a huge influence on how movies and TV and storytelling was handled after this. I mean, we have Wonder Years, which was basically just a mimic of this, and we've all been exposed to stories of you know, like this.
Yeah, no, but kid, old guy, point, a guy grows up, mature writer man is now reminiscing about his youth. Like, it's like Stephen King is owed more than people think when it comes to tropes.
Yes,
and
yes, and no. Like, Stephen King, stop writing about writers. Seriously, stop.
I love when he writes about writers.
I mean, he wrote
this. All he does.
He wrote this ages ago, so it's not quite fair to levy that.
Well, he
on
needs
him
to
now,
go back in time and then stop.
Yeah. in fact,
Mr. King, stop. Watch out for that van.
Yeah, look out for the van, buddy. Stay on the other side of the road.
If only we could go back and warn him.
Yeah, so he almost did go back because he wrote himself into the fifth or sixth Dark Tower book, sixth, mm-hmm, I think.
Sixth.
And he said he was going to go back in and remove all that. And then he never did. So I don't know what he's doing.
He's
the most
prolific writer in ever.
He may be. And he's got his problems. There's no doubt about it. You can't have that body of work without going, you kind of got issues. But this was part of that three-story compilation thing that included Shawshank and included Apt Pupil.
Right.
Yeah,
three of which are considered kind of the stuff, at least back then, the things that were outside of his paranormal monster books / you know, science fiction or whatever else he was working on, and they all are movies. I don't know about, I never saw Apt Pupil, but they're all movies, or maybe it was the other one with Anthony Hopkins, something about, oh crap, what was that called? Shit.
Come again. Say it again. Give me more information.
Anthony Hopkins. He's in a movie. It's right on the tip of my tongue. It's a Stephen King story. Something about Atlantis.
Oh, yeah. But it took place in Castle Rock, right?
Hearts of Atlantis. That's it. That's it.
Right.
The heart of Alanis Morissette. That's it.
Atlantis.
The bitterest pill. No, the jaggedest pill. What is it, Brian?
Alanis has the jagged little pill.
The jagged little pill.
Jan has the bitterest pill.
Not the littlest pill. The littlest pill is...
Nobody has the littlest pill.
No, not anymore. So, anyways, this is one of those, and I like these a lot. And I came away really liking this, so I'm anxious to get to the crux of why Randy doesn't think it holds up or ages well.
Here's a really cool thing to think about before we get to Randy, is based on the location of the original story. Now, they moved the story across the country to Oregon for the movie.
Yeah.
But Castle Rock is you know, this place that Stephen King always tends to borrow from, which is Castle Rock, Maine, is just down the street from Shawshank. And the time period, basically, while these kids are looking for the dead body, Andy Dufresne is digging the tunnel.
Yeah.
He's gotten the poster, and he's digging the tunnel to get out of Shawshank at the same time.
He's preparing to walk or climb through miles of shit.
Exactly. Yeah. He could have come out clean on the other side and walked past these boys on the railroad track singing lullaby.
I think I think someone needs to superimpose that in a background scene somewhere. You know,
that'd be amazing.
That would be awesome.
That would be a mashup of the movies, is what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. It is interesting because Rob Reiner's company, Castle Rock Entertainment, by the way, mm-hmm. I didn't realize that was Rob Reiner who owned or who is the purveyor of that, but also how into King he was. And a bunch of the trivia supports the idea that this was like a match made in heaven, these two, because right. Stephen King really, really liked his treatment of this film, felt like it was the best adaptation anyone had done of his work. And up till then, I mean, we had nothing but crap for Stephen King movies.
Yeah. And if you watch I have the Blu-ray, the 25th anniversary Blu-ray, which came out, I guess, back in 2006. No, mm-hmm. what would it be? 2011, excuse me. And they have a whole set where Stephen King is just gushing over Rob Reiner and how great he did. And yeah, they seem to really have clicked because even Stephen King said that the movie was like, comparing the book and the movie was like apples and oranges. Both of them have their own unique taste. And he thinks that Rob Reiner is a director who can really tell a character story. And so he felt very comfortable, even though those things that were different, he felt like he really caught the heart of it.
He kind of got it. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. According to the trivia, it kind of freaked him out because it says after Rob Reiner screened the movie for Stephen King, Reiner noticed that King was visibly shaking and wasn't speaking. King left the room, and upon his return, I don't know, he took a big dump or something. You know, he told Reiner that the movie was the best adaptation of his work he'd ever seen. So apparently those two really gelled. And
He was overheard in the bathroom going, why did Denny have to die?
Exactly.
Why did Denny have to die?
Then he came back in and said, all right, Meathead, you did good, Meathead. You did good.
I mean, hey, you did good, Meathead.
Sorry, that was his voice. What?
Out of all four of us, who do you think is going to cry first during this episode? Because everybody cries in this movie. All four of the characters eventually cry, and that's part of it.
So, Vern cries?
Yeah, they all cry. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's get right to it. This is a D&D adventure campaign of a movie. All right, so Corey Feldman is a jester / bard. Jerry O'Connell. Jerry O'Connell is whirlwind barbarian.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Will Wheaton is a sensitive mage. Uh-huh. Kind of hard to pin down the other guy. What's his name?
He's just a ranger. He's like a rogue.
Ranger?
He's like a rogue ranger guy. Yeah. He's like Aragorn, kind of. Got a dark past. Nobody knows what's up. You know?
So.
He's the thief, clearly.
Obviously, yeah, it works right.
That's right. Yeah. He stole the milk money.
Yeah, he's roguish. There you go.
What's his name? River Phoenix.
River Phoenix, yeah.
He is rogue-ish.
Joaquin's brother, you know.
Yep, good old Joaquin.
For those who forget that they were related, those two.
I actually think one of my complaints about the film is that they don't develop these strong character archetypes and then stick with them. Mm. That rather, I mean, yes... Will Wheaton's character is the sensitive type, but then, you know, he over and over just behaves like the rest of them. They just all kind of fall into the same, you know what I mean? The same patterns of insulting each other.
I liked it when they're yelling at each other, calling their mom's names and all that. The reason I think that contrast worked for me, and it's interesting you brought that up because I actually remember this as well. It worked for me because I kind of remember doing this a little bit. Because in my in my little archetypal group of kids growing up, I was the little sensitive Barty type. And I was the one that was always a little bit more thoughtful or a little bit more resonant to say, guys, we probably shouldn't put that poo bag on old lady Doris's house.
Right.
Because she's really old and this is mean and we shouldn't do that to her. We should save this for that jerk up the road with the dog or whatever. I mean, that I was that guy.
Yeah.
But then I would also, you felt this need to jump in and go, oh yeah, well your farts smell like your mom's breath or whatever. and I felt that felt real to me. That felt like accurate right. to me. So I have a slightly different perspective on that, but I feel like that was handled okay. But I see what you're saying. It makes sense what you're saying.
Like it really did end up just being group of rambunctious boys versus lost boys for me in the end. And mm-hmm. I read the quote, I'm sure we all read the quote from Will Wheaton a couple of years ago where he said that the characters were all very different. And he describes how he was actually awkward and nerdy and shy and River was actually cool and smart and passionate and so forth. Like, yeah, well, I didn't really get that in the characters. And again, it's 20, 30 years later. Sorry.
Right.
It's 30 years later. You know what I mean? Like I've seen a lot of films that have probably, you know, pressed some buttons. But I just, except for Corey Feldman, who is definitely a standout, like, and he is unlike the others.
Yeah,
he is such a tragic. The man is a tragic figure in life. I would love to see more about Corey Feldman, because a lot of people he's been
sure
close
there's
to
a true Hollywood story out there for you,
right? He has had so many people that were close to him, and he has been a rock. Mm-hmm. And watching these people around him who are just swimming in self-destruction, like from Michael Jackson to River Phoenix, all these people he was close to. But he was able to be
stable.
Starting
to make him look suspicious.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But no, he's a very stable person. Even though he probably has the most angst of anybody of any of those people, he was just always so angry, and maybe that's the reason why. Maybe
he let that out with his character portrayals, and he claims to have a pretty rough upbringing and kind of crappy parents and all this other stuff. So I can't figure that guy out.
On Corey Feldman for being as stable as he has been and not falling into drugs
lately.
there was the drug time. Right, the drug rehab business.
Good on him for escaping the 80s.
Yes, he got out of the Corey time with relatively unscathed. He's got his photos on IMDb are really weird. That's awesome.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to cast judgment about people's photos, but there's something about those photos that are freaking me out. Especially there's one where he's just sort of standing there. It's a recent one. And I'm pretty sure he is a dwarf troll man.
Oh, when he's got his long hair. Yeah. I see.
Yeah, long hair makes an average person who is average height look shorter.
Yeah, and when they're, you know, in their early 40s, it just makes us look weird.
That was his Terrence Trent D'Arby period. With the lounge suit and the long hair. And
nicely said. So some of the trivia for this movie are my favorite things in the world, and I got to share at least two of these.
Okay.
So this one blew my mind, because the timeline never occurred to me. But it was only the very next year that Wesley became Wesley.
Right.
It was 86, really? And then in 87, Star Trek started, and he was Wesley. Now, to me, there was this huge gap of time between Will Wheaton roles of, like, oh, yeah, I remember when he was a kid and he was in Stand By Me. Boy, that was forever ago. I guess he's going to have to settle on one of the Star Trek role now, because there's no other movie jobs coming up. It's the next year.
I promise you, I had this whole reaction that you did, and for me, it was like the movie started, and it introduced these four boys, and I'm like, which one of these is Will Wheaton?
Yeah.
Because that's how different he is in the next generation next year.
It couldn't be any different. Like, it's a very, this is a very subtle, quiet little role. I really like it, by the way. I think he's great in this.
The Will Wheaton, the person, I feel actually doesn't come through in Stand By Me.
Yeah, he comes through better in Star Trek, don't you think?
Right, that's how I was able to justify the fact that I had a hard time placing him in this movie in 2015. I got it, but it took me a little while to lock in on him, because he's just, that year or year and a half or something must have just been transformative for the dude.
Now, I think this movie might have been transformative, because watching everything I have seen, I hate in some ways that I have digested this film and picked it apart and watched so much stuff behind the scenes. But Rob Reiner took these guys, these four kids, and basically took them through acting classes before this film even started. So the things they learned in this film, I think, is one of the reasons why they were so strong later on. I mean, at 12 and 13 and 14, these guys were introduced to, you know, Rob Reiner, who is, you know,
he's an actor's director, man.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And he really groomed these kids from that early on, and I'm sure that just kind of went through their entire career. So I think what you had seen, that transformation, was a net result from what he experienced, what Will Wheaton experienced in this movie.
Probably, but also it's his biggest hit. He was never going to have anything bigger than this, Will Wheaton.
Right.
This was the biggest, as far as films go, this is number one. You can't, you can't name another one. I can't.
Yeah, he was the lead in this.
Yeah, and it was good, and it had lasting impact, and everyone thinks nostalgically about it and all that. Yes, Randy?
I don't understand why he's top billed on this movie. Everywhere I look, Will Wheaton's top billed. Like, I don't feel like the movie's about him. It's about Like, if it's about anything for me, it's about a bunch of families in this little town abusing their children. Like,
it really is. That was the late '50s. You know, that's what that was.
Well, the fact that he's the voice through which the narrator speaks, I think. Right. Is what okay.
So,
yeah. Built.
So actually and that's another thing. I never felt like Richard Dreyfuss and Will Wheaton's voices were connected.
Right. I could never see. I always had the disconnect as well. I never could see Will Wheaton growing up to be Richard Dreyfuss.
That voice. I don't know why it didn't work for me.
Part of it is
have friends like they did when they were 12.
Part of the problem is we have an adult Will Wheaton who's essentially the age that this character would have been when he was writing this memoir. And we have that now, so we know what he would look and sound like, and it doesn't jive.
So Rob Reiner needs to George Lucas this business and stick current age Will Wheaton in.
Yeah, dude, that's
a great not a bad idea. I'd have fun with that.
I'd watch that. That'd be all right.
Will is a fantastic voice actor.
Yeah. He does a great job. Speaking of which, so here's this funny thing. So a year later, he's in Starfleet, right? He's basically the analogous Chekhov character for the first couple seasons of Star Trek, for sure. Right. Wheaton would later lend his voice to various Romulan characters in Star Trek 2009, which I didn't know he did.
No.
Which featured Anton Yelchin as Chekhov. Yelchin also began his career as a child in a Stephen King adaptation, which was Hearts in Atlantis in 2001. Mm-hmm. So we'd look at all the similarities.
Look at the connections.
All the red pieces of yarn crisscrossing all over this blackboard.
Right, everyone's got a red shirt on now. It's weird. My other favorite piece of trivia is this. Kiefer Sutherland claimed in an interview that in one of the locations of the film, this Renaissance Fair area where this thing was being held, I think it was near the Tim where they did the barf scene, and the cast and crew attended and bought some cookies at this fair. Unfortunately, the cookies turned out, nobody knew this, but the cookies turned out to be pot cookies. And according to Kiefer, 2 hours later, the crew couldn't find Jerry O'Connell. So they were hunting around for him. They find, you know, chubby little Jerry O'Connell crying in a corner somewhere, high on cookies somewhere in the park. And he was completely high.
He had a food problem at the time, man. He probably consumed many brownies.
I bet I could eat 5 of these brownies.
It's going to be delicious.
I see monkeys.
My favorite piece of trivia is that this is one of the few movies ever made that had no one paying any attention to visual continuity at all.
Yeah.
Oh, ever. Really? Tell me. Give me some because
lay it out.
This movie is so close to me. I probably put a lot of things together that might not be there.
Yeah. It just goes. I mean, every shot. I was like, wait a minute. Where's his rucksack? Oh, wait. How did that? I thought he was wearing dog tags. Like every shot, there's something that's missing, moved. Rearrange. There's shots where two people are talking and suddenly they're standing in different places. Like it's just one of those films where you're supposed to let go and not pay attention to that crap.
I guess it's probably hard. It's like wrangling cats a little bit. These kids, I wonder. Like there's another part of the commentary that talked about Rob Reiner not being able to make Wesley making Will Wheaton and O'Connell look scared enough when the train's coming because they were really in no danger. They were using a lens trick to make it seem like the train was right there, and they could just take after take after take, and he just couldn't get the emotion out of them. So he yelled at them, and they all cried for real. And then the very next take was perfect because they were upset already, and that was maybe the kind of movie this was, because you're talking about a bunch of prepubescent, in some cases barely pubescent boys who are, you know, back at the hotel on the shooting locations, they're throwing furniture into the pool and just being dicks, you know. And I'm sure River Phoenix is in charge of all of the tomfoolery, the thuggery going on. Just it sounds like a thing.
Yeah, and that actually, like, some of the continuity errors, I was wondering if the actors were pranking everybody. Like, the one that just stuck out to me and it just hurt. is after walking for miles and miles and miles, and they're all carrying bedrolls. Every one of them's got a bedroll. It's just part of the visual element of the film, is that these kids are walking down the railroad tracks with bedrolls. They go to the junkyard. They get into this little adventure. They come over the fence. Corey Feldman goes into the trope of the berserk button. I don't know if you...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Alert there.
That's a good one.
Musgrove.
Oh, wrong one. There you go.
Apparently, that character's got a berserk button. All you got to do is call his father a loony, and he goes apeshit.
Or insult the French.
Right. So, in that scene, in that sequence, when they're on the other side of the fence, there you never see Corey Feldman's bedroll. And that persists all the way through them picking up all their stuff and walking down the trail. And you never see Corey Feldman's bedroll. And I'm like, what happened to his bedroll? Oh, no, they left it in the junkyard. We're going to have to go back or something like that. That never happens.
Yeah.
And finally, an hour later, you see them all. And Corey Feldman's magically got his bedroll. And I just that stuck for me so hard and it bugged me. And I actually went back and I'm like, was he holding it like a magician behind him so I couldn't see it, you know? And it's just this movie has tons of that all over the place.
Well,
wow. I'd never even noticed that. I mean, I remember him taking the bedroll off when he was talking about storming the beach at Normandy, standing on the train tracks. Yeah. And you see him actually take it off his shoulder and throw it on the ground. But the fact that you never see him put it back on. And
oh, at all. Like wow. There's several shots where it's just totally missing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help. I wondered later, maybe this little kid is like, I'm going to. I'm not going to ruin Rod Reiner's film.
The thing I wondered about was, all right, so this kid got hit by the body that they go see, hit by the train, knocked out of his keds into the bushes, right?
they all seem to have pretty good info on before they got there that what had happened.
Yeah. Right. And they're walking along the train tracks. Oh, they get, the bridge and they have to run across the bridge because the train's coming. And then they cross the bridge and we're like, all right, now we're going to go down through this forest area.
Yeah.
To get to the train tracks again, where the kid got hit. Why not just stay on the train? Or was it?
It was a shortcut. They talked about that. They talked about it looping around. They could follow the track. And it was
really?
Jerry, there was Jerry some reference to that. Yeah.
But it was to why they were getting off the tracks. It was symbolic to leave the tracks and the safety and danger was impending.
I mean, obviously, you wouldn't have the leech issue, but
right, exactly.
My memory was that the wolves were Kiefer and his boys, but it wasn't.
I thought about that too. Those were over the top.
You
know what though? Not too far off though, because we've done Crazy Neighbors Fire Pit late at night, and back when we had a field behind before they started doing some building around our houses, we could hear all that stuff, and it sounded like it would freak us out. Because it'd be like, yip, 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 yip.
And like multiples at the same time and stuff?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was all coming from one direction, fortunately.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well, one direction.
It was all coming from those kids. Those crazy British kids.
Now, this movie really struck me because where I lived, we were kind of, I lived out in the country growing up. And when I was like 12, 13, I lived in like my backyard was woods, huge amounts of woods that led back to train tracks, and those led down to our lake. And all this stuff really struck me as very familiar. Even in 86, I felt like, where we lived in our small southern town really felt like late 60s in a lot of way. And so seeing that train in this movie and bearing down on those kids, it impacted the crap out of me because I could imagine that situation happening to me. Did it scare the crap out of you guys too?
Universal? For me, it was because trains are kind of, when I was growing up, trains are a little bit foreign. We didn't have a lot around here.
Right.
And so to me, they just seemed like giant beasts of incredible destructive power, and to be chased by that on a bridge where you had no way to go except off into the river, which again, my memory was that they jumped in the river. I don't know why.
I did too. They do. They almost jump in the river. Yeah. They just jump at the last second.
You're confusing them with Vin Diesel in a Corvette.
Or Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah, right, or a million other movies. Right. It's a tropey thing with trains, but it did have that.
It brings up, trains bring up an intensity level that just makes a scene, where a scene may be where kids would just be talking and getting a little bit heated. If you put a train in the situation, the whole situation just gets 10 times louder and more intense.
Well, it's because it's a giant mechanical thing that can't stop.
Yeah.
All it can do is go, and they're just going to get hit,
And, again, going back to this town needs a therapist, that train conductor needs a therapist. Holy cow. Poor driver. Always about
this
to
week
kill
I
kids.
Hit a kid. No. There's more kids.
I like to think, here's my little sub story. Okay, my sub story is the train guy was like, I can't. This is another kid's in the. Okay, I'm out of the train business. I'm gonna start carrying logs across the country in the trucks. Oh shit! What? I like to think that was the same guy who had to play chicken like three times. in the movie.
Speaking of character motivations and tropes, quite frankly, it's a total trope.
Yeah.
What's driving Kiefer Sutherland to be just nothing but evil? Like what?
The whole situation with nowhere. He's a nowhere to go. He's one of those guys got nowhere to go.
He's a lost boy, really.
Yeah, he's a lost boy. I mean, that's basically his whole motivation. His parents, we've already established that every parent in this movie is the suck. You know, they're all
and hard. Every person. No, there's only one person in this movie who's genuinely cool to people, and that's John Cusack, and his character got killed.
Yeah, his character and
that's,
died.
That's the tragedy.
Completely forgot John Cusack was in this movie.
Yeah, a lot of people do. They forget that he's in here because it's such a, it's funny, it's a pivotal role because it sets up why Wesley is the way that he is.
Right.
But he's in there so briefly.
Yeah. I love it. We just need to keep calling him Wesley. I think that's great. So here,
get off the tracks.
He's on a holodeck somewhere. That's what this whole thing is.
Here's some other trivia that cracks me up. Corey Haim turned down the role of Chris in order to star in Lucas from 86 as well. So if you're wondering where the other Corey was, he was literally going to be in this movie.
But I'm glad not, because Chris is a real important, mature role, and River Phoenix he seems like an alpha dog. You know what I mean? He seems like
he's good. All of their crying moments sucked, I thought. I don't think, but that's hard acting. I don't know if you can expect a 12-year-old to do that.
I think I thought River Phoenix's was really good. I mean, I remember crying like that to the point of almost sounding ridiculous. And it's one of the reasons why I hate crying today. It's really hard for me to cry because I feel like I sound ridiculous. And the way River Phoenix cried was similar to how I would remember crying when I was 12, 13.
You have to really rack your nuts.
This brings me to my favorite bit of trivia.
Oh, yeah?
In the movie, which is Will Wheaton was way, way faster than River Phoenix in a foot race.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the script had River Phoenix winning.
Yeah.
I don't think it should have. I think the script should have had Will Wheaton's character winning easily, because I think it would have thrown a little bit of a wrinkle into their relationship.
Yeah.
But anyway, I love this trivia that they had to have Will Wheaton pretend to be running fast while not actually running fast so he could be beaten by the much slower River Phoenix.
Yeah.
I mean, it's called Stand By Me, not Suck My Wake.
My Fat Wake.
My Dust.
Yeah.
My fat wake
or whatever it was earlier. While practicing his lines, Jerry O'Connell, who could not look more different today, by the way.
Such a handsome fella. A handsome fella, didn't he?
Yeah, really weird. Anyway, he was incredibly impressed that an 11-year-old, he was being allowed to swear. He thought that was great.
It's a true story.
I think that's awesome. And they do swear a lot in this movie. I forgot what they made kids say in 1986's Stand By Me. There's a lot of kids swearing.
There is.
And
that was the first time, and that was the first time I was exposed to that adult language.
Oh yeah, never heard a kid say the F word. Well, I mean, I'd heard kids that age say the F word, but I never heard it in a film. You know?
Yeah,
that was weird.
Jeez, it was so much profanity. You don't see that. You don't see these movies now that portray 12, 13-year-olds in that light. There's 12, 13-year-old actors in movies, but it's totally portrayed totally different. I don't think you get a true, accurate reflection of what it's like to be 12 and 13, because there's a lot of profanity during that age.
Oh yeah.
For a lot of kids.
Listen to these crossovers too. So Stephen King does this with all his books. A lot of times he does. He has a lot of crossovers of various types. Mm-hmm. And Ace Miller, AKA Kiefer's character, reappeared in the book Needful Things in 93 as that character.
Mm.
That's a good book, by the way. Although he does not appear in the film based on that book, which is a good film.
I love Needful Things, and it bugs me that it's a film because it's such a complicated book.
I completely agree. I think maybe it could be, I don't know, maybe the right hands could do it better, but that adaptation is bad. The dog Chopper is compared to Cujo in 83. Characters are familiar with Shawshank Prison from Shawshank Redemption. And of course, Teddy Duchamp, or however you say his name.
Duchamp.
Was actually first mentioned in King's first book, Carrie, in 76, in which Carrie destroys a gas station he once worked at. So all these comparisons over the damn place. And according to Feldman, and he said this in several interviews, that of all the characters he's ever played, the character of Teddy was actually the closest to his own personality and his personal life at the time. And I hope that includes that laugh. That's what I hope.
Yeah.
Hey, Grace, go the pooch.
Hey, anyway. do we still have a, is there still a philosophy with kids I mean, we have the internet today where anybody can be famous. Any kid can be famous.
Sure.
I mean, as a kid, did you think that by finding a dead body, that would be what brought you to fame?
No.
I mean.
Never. Well, after I saw this movie, maybe, but not until then. They're up to that.
Yeah. That was basically the primary motivation for all these kids trying to converge upon this dead body was, you know, we'll be famous.
Yeah, but also, the cops suck, man. Like,
God, no kidding.
Like, Jerry O'Connell, like 5 seconds. There it is.
Yeah, there it is. And not only that, but everybody through the movie are like, yeah, there's this body. It got hit by a train. We're going to go find it. How do you all get all that? I mean, I understand the part where he's under the porch and hears the stuff and everything, but still, it just felt like, man, the adults are bad. The parents are terrible. The cops are really bad. Like, nobody's good at anything.
It's almost
here.
Like a John Hughes film where all the adults are horrendous.
There's only one adult type that's doing anything in this movie and doing it well, and that's the radio man.
Oh, right.
Radio man is doing his job, doing it fantastically.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
The shop owner.
He's playing all the
convenience store owner.
Yeah. I think the guy with the junkyard, you know, he did what he did. He was a dick. He was a dick, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
He did what he was doing.
I know all your parents. They're all going to get a call from me.
They're all as bad as I am.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess I don't mind movies where kids are made the focus and from their perspective adults are full of crap. I guess it's not a problem I necessarily have, but this one just felt like almost like Lord of the Flies, like kids were running everything.
Mm-hmm. Right, and right.
It never felt like there was an adult who was worth a lick anywhere near this town. And that bothered me.
It doesn't bother me. I miss it. I miss those movies where, you know, you actually step inside the kid's world, because you do. You kids are influenced by their parents, and they had touches with parents, and their lives are kind of ruled by some of those things. But really, inside that friendship and inside all of that, you know, camaraderie, that they're actually living a totally separate life that doesn't really. You know, parents are there, but they're not really. So I thought, I love these kind of movies.
Well, for much of my childhood, that's how I felt growing up.
Yeah.
I've asked my kids about this, and they say the opposite. And it kind of is weird to me. And I think it's because I refuse to grow up and I pretend like I'm 10 all the time. And right. I think that probably helps. But they basically have said, yeah, all my friends talk about how they hate their parents all the time, and we don't understand it. And I'm like, well, it's probably because I am not very mature and I act like a child, and that's got its own problems. But when I was growing up, there was such a pressure on that generation to be parental and proper, mm-hmm. and separate from the kids, and whatever they're up to can't be good. And so I always felt like I was off on my own, you know?
Right. You know, and I say there's not a lot of movies like this, but there's a movie that I just recently watched with Kevin Bacon. It's called Cop Car. And
crap? I haven't heard of this.
I know. And I was like, what is this? And I saw it at the Red Box, and I hadn't really seen much advertised about it, but it's about some couple of kids who are about anywhere between 10 and 12, and they're out in the backfields of their, you know, rural area, and they find a cop car just sitting there. And so they end up taking the cop car, and then there's this whole thing that happens, and Kevin Bacon is the sheriff involved in this, and almost all of it is told through the kind of the kid's perspective.
I was hoping you were going to say the car's perspective, but okay.
From the car's perspective, yeah. And so, but it's a really, if you haven't seen it, I think it's a fantastic.
Is it new?
It's got a very motivating trailer. Like, that trailer for Cop Car made me want to watch Cop Car.
How old is Cop Car?
Never even heard of this.
It's 2014, I think, is when it came out. Oh. But it said you can pick it up at Redbox. I don't think it's streaming anywhere yet.
I'm suddenly interested in Cop Car. Never even heard of it. I'm with Ibbot. I had no idea.
Accidentally see Let's Be Cops. Completely
right. Totally different vibe.
All right. So I want to address this, and I want Randy to respond.
Okay.
Rob Reiner, the idea that he made two timeless films, Princess Bride, which you could watch now and just be like, oh, this looks like it was made yesterday, and this is lumped into that.
This
as
is
well.
Your other one. I was going to say When Harry Met Sally. This is Spinal Tap.
Those feel like things of their time, though, to me.
They do. Oh, especially When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
Like, I see what you mean. This is a film in the 80s about the 50s. Okay.
Kind of that, but also just this feeling of, it doesn't feel like, okay, so like Princess Bride, it doesn't feel like a fantasy tale filmed in the 80s. Yeah. It films like a fantasy tale. Right. Or it looks like one, and then it just sticks around, right? And same thing with this. So that's what people say, and I think I agree. You say it doesn't hold up, which implies that it may have held up better when it came out versus now. What is it about it that you haven't already sort of expressed, and maybe you have, but what is it about it you think that doesn't hold up? Where's the mistake? Where's the goof?
It's not got any good humor. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
the thing that you love about When Harry Met Sally is that it cracks itself up all the time. And there's times when that movie is devastating. Like, it's so freaking sad and personal, but it's got so much comic relief that you appreciate the counterbalance.
I don't remember that movie at all. It's like orgasms in restaurants or something.
That's all I can really remember from it as well. Like,
that's so funny that you have the one thing that you pick out of that film. That's just orgasms in restaurants.
That's the one I remember too, is Meg Ryan just going over the top.
The cross-country drive and the...
who remembers that crap?
Them as you know, New Year's Eve.
Imagine if The Princess Bride had no comic relief.
All four of the films that we talked about, Rob Reiner, Stand By Me is the most somber. Like, as far as comedy elements, you're absolutely right on the money.
And you're depending on 12-year-olds to carry your drama.
Yeah.
And I don't think they do badly. I'm not saying that. They do fine.
Yeah.
And Rob Reiner directs them well, but it just feels so contrived. Like, okay, what's this forced drama now? Why are we even doing this? Okay, right, because kids want to see a dead body. Okay, because kids want... I had to keep reminding myself, we're doing all of this, and we're going through all of this because kids want to see a dead body.
Yeah.
And then I keep getting taken back, like I'm watching Lost. I keep getting taken back to what broke these kids down earlier.
Yeah.
You know, and I keep being reminded that Corey Feldman's dad burned his ear off or something. And
which, by the way, that ear thing changed a lot during there. There was parts of it where his ear was fine. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Let's really look at this ear. Nope.
And I get to the end and I'm like, gosh, I hope they take that gun and shoot every single person. And and by the way, this film has the trope of no girls allowed like I've never seen.
Girls and black people. They're not anywhere.
Right. The mom is the only woman in the film, right? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will Wheaton's mom. Right.
Yeah, Will Wheaton's mom. Yeah.
Oh, and Rob Reiner's assistant who comes out and goes, are y'all shooting cherry bombs out back here?
Right. That's his assistant?
Yeah, that was his assistant from the time.
Was it really?
Yeah.
You really have seen the behind the scenes DVDs.
Oh, I've seen all the crap.
Wow.
And by the way, a real Stephen King story would have ended with Will Wheaton killing everyone. Like, one shot, one kill, takes down 9 people around him.
That's a Stephen King movie. I don't know about that.
How about 9?
Right. 9 dead bodies.
The bodies.
I felt like it was reminiscent of the best of Stephen King, and it kept true to that. I feel like the lesson of why you're obsessed with that body and what it actually means is up to interpretation, but also kind of moving. It's this transitional time in young people's lives. Where are they headed next? It's the age old coming of age business. That's all this is. And of those movies, I'll bet you if you took a poll and said, all right, best coming of age movies, whether people remember it more fondly than they should or not, they're going to put this right up at the top.
Yes, absolutely. And they should. The film absolutely nails what it's actually like. It doesn't, Stephen King, he would have had the gun have a supernatural quality that makes it fire every now and then. But no. They nailed reality. And reality was a bunch of a town full of broken people emotionally abusing their children who go and almost get themselves killed over and over.
I think, honestly, did you read the novella?
I have read it.
Randy? This is Stephen King. Yeah, he does do a lot of supernatural things. But in this, he was actually in this whole book, different seasons, he was doing a lot of stuff that was true things that he has seen during life.
Different seasons is like a semi-autobiographical.
Sure.
Right.
He claims the leech thing really happened, for example. He got a leech on his wiener.
Right. What did somebody else had a leech on his wiener? But yeah,
is that what it was? Still,
if you've seen a leech on somebody else's wiener, you pretty much imagine.
I've had leeches on every part of my body. I don't understand what the problem here is.
Whoa. Randy's into getting leeches on every part of his body.
Is this your first fold or something?
I grew up going swimming in rivers and stuff. Like, it just, this happens.
Yeah. You do get leeches. I've had leeches. They don't hurt. They're not nearly as bad as they make it seem.
They don't hurt at all because they numb you. It's just, it freaks you the crap out to think about, you know, blood sucking.
And all that blood coming off of the, yeah, right.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago when I got stung by a bee was way more bothersome to me than having a leech on my bum or something. I don't even, it's just not a.
Yeah. I don't know that. It's interesting because when he gets real, not realistic, but when he does his stories that are off his normal, you know, path of supernatural this and that, I really, really like those, like, a lot. And he's got these crime novel series that apparently that he's done here recently that's supposed to be really good, and it's pure straight up just detective stuff. Nobody's connected to the Red or the Crimson King in the Dark Tower or something weird like that. It's all just straight up stuff, and I really like it when he does that. And if you think about the Stephen King books that have been adapted into film that have really taken off and killed it, they're all that. It's Shawshank Redemption, one of arguably Green the Mile. Finest films ever made. Green Mile's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I never saw Hearts of Atlantis or whatever it is, but I know a lot of people really like that. At Pupil's pretty good. Like, he's just really adept at that, and people. You know, we're all trying to adapt his big, we're trying to make a new Stand, and we're trying to get a new It movie made and all this stuff. That's great and everything, but I wish there would be more focus on maybe his other stuff, because there's some subtleness there that's really good.
The non-supernatural stuff. Yeah, for sure.
You said coming of age movies.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you. And I'd love to just go around the table and name some coming of age movies that are personal and important to you. For me, it's. It's Almost Famous.
Oh, wow.
It's last year's Boyhood.
Okay.
Was really captured my attention.
Yeah.
Captured my imagination.
I think you're not alone in that. I like a lot of people did. Right.
I think anything by John Hughes for me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to say. Anything, our generation was so John Hughes.
Except
and I mean, The Breakfast
Uncle
Club.
Buck.
Yeah, Uncle Buck, not so much.
I actually got along with Uncle Buck pretty good.
I didn't hate Uncle Buck. I just didn't resonate. Like, what's the other one? Dutch?
Al Bundy.
Not so much there, but like, you know, Breakfast Club is an anthem for my gen.
16 Candles, right? Yeah. There's those. Mm-hmm. They all go together. 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Stand By Me. Apparently, are all
Risky
in this
Business.
Little,
yeah, I would even say Some Kind of Wonderful kind of nailed it for me too.
The Wrong Side of the Tracks kind of stuff. Yeah,
Same time frame, Karate Kid.
Yeah, that was a big deal. Although I don't know if it. I don't know. That one didn't feel like a. It was definitely a coming of age movie, but it didn't.
It was, but I didn't relate to it at all.
Yeah, it didn't relate to me very much.
Rousseau was not me.
I have Almost Famous. What about Cameron Crowe's first one, Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Did that?
No, not so much, because it was before comedy, I was in high school that I saw that.
Yeah.
And even after being in high school, it felt very, very much like caricatures of people.
Yeah.
It felt like people that were before me. It felt like the generation right before me.
Time Bandits is more of a coming of age story for me than that would have been.
That's a good one.
Which I know is super weird. but I like all that. I like
Dark
that cool
Crystal was my coming.
You know what I mean?
If you want to see a more recent example of this that I think it is really good, and it's a better Stand By Me than Stand By Me, it's Mud. McConaughey and these two kids, and the two kids just embody this whole idea is right there. It's fantastic. That movie's freaking great. I love that movie. And McConaughey is not that big a deal in it. He's in it, but he's not. You know, it's not the focus.
Do you feel like Goonies hits the description, or is it too
Goonies
adventure?
Goonies is great, but it was a different kind of. That's a good question.
Because the characters never really. Evolved very much in Goonies. It was pretty much they were going through a situation.
Every decision, every point at change for all those characters was just based on finding One-Eyed Willie's gold, as opposed to this, where the finding the body is the mission, but there's so many things that happen along the road that have nothing to do with them finding the body.
Yeah.
I mean, this is pretty much their last summer of hoorah before they have to grow up. And we kind of get that with Jerry Connell when he walks away and he finds the penny. He's still a child. He's still the youth. He's not quite where these other guys are.
Yeah. He's not done with fried Twinkies yet. He's going to be the slim, good-looking Sliders man. But right now, not so much. Right.
Yeah, the Rebecca Romijn man.
Yeah.
how? Never mind.
Yeah.
Forget it.
You went from, what was it? You went from what was his character's name? Vern? You went from Vern?
Yeah, Vern.
To freaking her?
Vern.
Anyway.
And I want to go back to the no girls thing, because I think there are some really good coming of age films that are as focused, if not more focused, on girls. Mm. I wanted to name My Girl, which,
My Girl, that's yeah. great,
which I thought was just a fantastic film.
Anytime you kill off
that's a great one.
Premier characters, why not?
Yeah, that's a great one. Okay. I put out the word.
Was that you being non-spoilery, Dunaway?
Right, yeah. I was debating, and I was like, surely everybody's seen it. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe.
I just tweeted it just to see what we'd get. What are your favorite coming-of-age movies right now? And in live real time, a bunch of people are saying Star Wars: A New Hope is a big one.
Yeah, because he was a coming-of-age. Man, sure. Luke was a lot too old to be coming-of-age, but...
Yeah, in a million years, I would not have listed that as a coming of age movie.
Yeah, he's right, but I wouldn't have thought of it. But he's right. Yeah. Stand By Me is written by a lot of these people, obviously, because that's the one. But I'm getting one here that says Dune.
Okay, so this is not helping. So
it's not helping
my point was going to be that if you expand it to include films like Juno and Mean Girls and My Girl. And Clueless.
She's
and
all that.
Yeah. You realize that as you go back in time, girls disappear from this genre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Man's world, baby.
It sucks.
Yeah, but I mean, I think if you put a woman, if you put a girl in this film that went along with them, it would have felt like she would have been shoehorned in there.
Yeah, for sure. But what if it was all girls?
Felt like these kids were pre, they would be... It would be all centered around one of them being in love with the girl. I mean, that's pretty.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. But also think about the time we live in. We're in a time of you know, various kinds of political conversations happening around gender and equality and everything else, right? That's the time we live in now. It's still true, though, that when I was a kid, if me and four friends were going to go see a body and the one girl we hung out with would have said, no, that's gross, you weirdos. Go, fine, do it yourself. I'm not going. Like, that's just the way it is. I don't know any girls who would have gone on a hunt to find a body with me. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't any, but none that I knew. Right. But every boy I knew would go and see a body.
Right.
You're saying this genre, but you're saying that this genre, as you go back in time, is gendered. That it's just, it starts out as a genre that is about boyhood.
Yeah, for sure.
And that is fascinating.
It is like, interesting, yeah. Well, I mean, who's making movies? Mostly men then. And what were they telling? Stories that related to them. So if you had women, more director's chairs in 1986, chances are you'd have had more, you know, and more of a studio system that were open to alternate coming of age tales
and
from female directors.
You know, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I assume, like, you know, the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants is probably the equivalent of that.
Right, there's one. Yeah, that's a good one.
It's right in there. 13 is another one.
The Notebook. I haven't seen The Notebook.
Notebook. What are you talking about?
I haven't seen it.
That's about old people.
Death.
I haven't seen The Notebook.
It's a coming of Rachel McAdams movie.
Oh, okay. Right. All right. That's all right.
Hey,
you know what, Scott? You should see The Notebook.
Okay.
I think you would like that movie.
All right.
Oh my God, no, you would. So, one of my favorite more recent coming of age movies, and I think people forget about this a lot. Super 8.
Oh, I love Super 8.
Yeah, really. Yeah,
and that had great. You know what? Let's talk about a movie where it's set in a time where boys would dominate the story, and they still sort of do. But she has an awesome role. That Fanning girl, Ellie Fanning's great in that.
Yeah.
That you know what, nailed it. I mean, it's a fantasy, it's, you know, science fiction and everything, but that he has the J.J. Abrams has a taste for this. Mm-hmm. and making these boys feel like the way the old movies used to make them feel. Like, I'll even argue he was better at expressing those character types than Stand By Me was.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think they were. Like, I know it's a fantasy and everything, and it's less about real whatever, but the characters themselves, each one of them and the plights they dealt with, including the girl, they were all better expressed as characters than you know, this guy who's going to be a troublemaker his whole life, or this kid is the squirmy little fat kid, and this kid's the weird one with the dad who burned his ear. And, you know, they it seemed like they just did he did a better job of that. So I'll give that
really
credit.
We were really hard on the fat kid during the 80s.
Oh, big time.
Movies. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Big time.
Twice it comes up. It comes up with Vern. It comes up with the
story.
Lardass.
Yeah, Lardass. Oh my
god, story, which we haven't even talked about.
But I know that was
actually be my favorite part of the movie,
and it was the most memorable part for me. I remember that part of the movie when I was a kid. It stuck with me way more than any of the rest of the stories. Matter of fact, I almost remember that being more of the movie than it actually was.
Yeah, it's one of those scenes. I'm trying to think of another. You know what? Actually, any movie with a big showcase barf scene sticks with me, like the Monty Python movie.
Oh right, yeah. This felt that's the thing that it completely reminded me of was The Meaning of Life and Mr. Creosote and the Wafer Thin Mint.
Yeah,
that whole thing.
I wish I'd seen this movie before 2015 because
right.
One of the things that really stuck with me probably didn't stick with you at all, which is they get miles away from home and realize nobody brought any food.
Yeah,
and right. By the way, the whole first part of that sequence, I'm thinking Corey Feldman's got the food and he's lying.
Yeah.
And he's gonna reveal it and he's going to have food. Anyway,
well, I would think the fat kid would have food and would be hiding it. Not Jerry Connell, is that not what he would right. do?
Yeah.
So nobody brought food, so they pull their money. They got $2.37. It's a freaking right. fortune.
Yeah. You know how many moon pies and Pepsis and RC colors you can buy with that?
They've got enough money to eat like kings at least out of the five and dime, they're going to eat like kings.
Yeah.
And this is really memorable to me because they get into the junkyard and then for whatever reason, they don't want to all go to the convenience store to get the convenience store. Sorry. That's not even a term back then, but they don't all want to go to the store together. None of them want to go. It's like the worst job ever. Oh,
yeah.
Going to have a Coke is going to be so horrible.
Yeah.
I have to go actually get food.
Yeah.
From that scene, what I took from it was I don't go to enough stores with meats and jars because that place was like, let's see what kind of meat we could put in different jars.
Yeah, that's a bygone thing, man.
Yeah, pickled eggs. And,
you don't see that anymore so much. But
that really stuck with me because it just felt so weird. Like it's all contrived that, they don't want to go to the store. They're all fighting over it.
All I remembered was the puke scene and the leeches and in Sandlot for a long time. All I remembered was them barfing on the merry-go-round thing or the whatever that thing was. That's the way. That's another Sandlot, by the way.
Great.
There's another coming of age movie. But those movies always have that, and it's always a boy thing, isn't it? It's always like, someone shit his pants, or someone barfed on a thing. It's girl movies don't do that. They don't sit around going, we're gonna eat all this stuff and yak everywhere.
So are we missing a market of coming of age nostalgia for women? I mean, is it because what do they have? They have like
not
a
anymore. Coming of age.
Yeah,
now it exists.
Well, like Carrie? Is that a great
No, but like Mean Girls.
She has a period. It's awesome.
Mean Girls is revered.
Right.
Clueless.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Sure.
There's a bunch of those.
You could name those now. We don't relate to them as much, but they would. My daughters have some of their own they would throw out. They'd say, this and that and the other. And they are, they're entitled to whatever their brand of that is. And it bugs me a little bit that there wasn't any of that before. It never occurred to me. But if you look at the 80s, all those movies were for dudes. Like all of it, all the stuff we love and we think about so fondly and all that, it's all dude movies, man.
It was. Even Star Wars.
What the hell was that? Was that a cat?
There's a cat.
Yeah, my cat. I'm going to have to freaking kill him. He hasn't said a word all morning. It's like, oh, look, film sack's on.
Can I ask for a trope?
Yeah. Hold on. Here. Whoops. Here.
Does this film have Chekhov's Goocher? And what I mean is when it is declared that the four of them are about to encounter bad luck.
Yeah.
Do they actually encounter the sort of bad luck that justifies the throwing of the four tails and calling it a goocher and freaking out?
The goocher.
Or do they actually get out? Do they kind of escape it? Is it Chekhov's goocher averted?
They avert it. They didn't spend much time on it. They just dismissed him and said, look, Jerry O'Connell, one day you'll be riding around with Gimli and sliding into different time frames. But not now. Not now. Now is your time to calm down and quit having superstitions. Goocher, though, a lot. Goocher's
because
great.
I just want to explain, if you've never heard of the trope of Chekhov's gun, it's whenever you're shown a gun earlier in a movie, someone's going to fire it by the end.
Yeah.
And, of course, this film has that. But the film also doesn't let you forget. that the gun is in somebody's, you know,
pants
pack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it never, like they, you know, they pull it out more than once. It's not, you know, forgotten like Chekhov's gun should be.
Yeah. Brotherhood of the Traveling Gun Pants. Got it.
But I was just shocked that it stops and has one of the characters go, "Oh gosh, that's a Goocher. We're all going to die," or whatever. And then I don't ever pick up on, I guess the train on the bridge sequence is supposed to be the thing, right? That's going to be the thing that's going to kill him.
Yeah.
And they escape it.
Yeah.
I think it's just all about intensification. And I mean, that's what just happens the whole movie. It's like everything intensifies. And I think that's what the Goocher was supposed to do. Just in case you forgot that it was.
So leeches are more intense. Leeches are more intense than Junkyard Dog.
Junkyard Dog
is more intense than Corey Feldman trying to commit suicide. Okay, yeah, I got you. Right.
Yeah. It just escalates.
And it builds to the end where, you know, yeah, where Ace in the worst shirt ever is confronting you with his dumb white hair. And, yeah, there's your ultimate standoff.
Right.
What's weird is I don't like this trope, which is I call it the needlessly sad trope.
Oh.
Telling the future of all these boys, like, he became a shore guy, and this other guy did a business thing here, and this other guy who you thought was going to be a criminal his whole life, he became a lawyer and a really good one, and then walked into a fight one day and got stabbed in the neck for no reason.
Stabbed in the neck at a fast food restaurant. What a great way to go.
I'm like, shit, man. That's a terrible way
to go. Yeah, because, you know, he escaped the knife fight from what happened there with at the body, but then he gets stabbed later on. So he's just maybe that's the Goocher. Maybe it was. It just took a little while to develop.
Probably some Stephen King Ka crap where it's like, it happened once, it'll happen again. I just listened to that, or I read that 1123 book.
Are you done?
I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. I think it's time travel Brian Ibbett could take.
I can't wait to read it. It is on my list after the Isaac Asimov thing that I've got.
Super interesting, but there's definitely through all his books, there's definitely, we've seen this before and now it's going to happen this time. Like there's a lot of that.
Next week on Booksack.
Booksack. I don't like that.
I'll throw a trope out.
All right. Real quick.
It's the slowly building. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
I love that one.
You like a nice slow stop it build up.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, the something's possessing them to make them stop what they're completely deep in thought about to get the other people to stop arguing and fighting.
Yeah.
And I was trying to find another good example of that. I know there are lots of them, but.
Oh, it rings a bell the minute you said it. Like,
yeah,
it's in a thousand things and I can't think of one though.
Well, exactly. And it works in different ways. Like when something's coming and you're like, run. No, run.
Run.
Run! Yes,
right. You know, like, they do that twice in this film then,
train!
Right?
Train! Yeah. Yeah, when they all train.
Yes.
Or when he yells train.
There's a train. Will Wheaton
train yelling right there, for sure. all right, I think we should do some clips.
Oh, one question, does anybody know what card game they're playing at the beginning?
Oh, no.
You don't. No way you do yourself a pat hand. You can't do yourself a pat hand.
I wonder if they made that up.
It's almost like a...
No, they're playing a
kind of thing without the board where they have to get to a certain number, and
it's a real game.
Is it?
Yeah. I forget what it was.
My search led me to this card game called 31.
Oh.
And I've never heard of it. And I know a lot of card games. I've never heard of 31. And I tried to understand it. And
is
I
it
guess
like 21?
I played 99.
It's kind of like 21.
You ever play 99? That's a fun one. That's a good game. Maybe
you
ever
play it's two card pickup? Dads love playing that game.
Anyway, yeah. I just found it is like bizarre to me that they're playing this childish little sum game, a sum of cards game, while smoking in their treehouse, be it all badass.
Yeah. You know? I love a treehouse. Oh, did you guys have a treehouse?
Yes, I did.
The trivia about what they smoked?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess Rob Reiner was like a hardcore non-smoker, avid non-smoker, campaigned for anti-smoking laws in California, like big time no more smoking. And so the cigarettes smoked by the boys, it says here, were made from cabbage leaves.
Right.
How do you do that? That sounds awful.
Just
awesome.
Dry them out, probably, just like anything else.
Yeah, just dry them out and smoke.
What would they do? They did that on for Mad Men or something. Like,
they used something else.
I wonder if you can just purchase cabbage cigarettes at this point. Let's see your lettuce. Let's see.
Oh, you know how many, Amazon probably has it. Let's find out.
You know how many vapors you'd have on Mad Men if it was 2015? It'd all
Quit
be vaping.
Smoking by smoking lettuce. Bravo Smokes. Okay, let's see. Herbal cigs.
Oh, it took me a minute to understand you were saying vapors.
Yeah, vaping people. Mm-hmm. Not vape, like, I've got a case of the vapors.
Okay, vapors.
Vapors.
You got some vapors.
Vapors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd all be vaping on big metal electronic cigarettes.
Oh, that's right, because back in the 60s,
because everyone smoked.
The actual device would have been the size of an iron lung.
Another fun thing they play with in that.
Here's me some 100% nicotine-free cocoa bean cigarettes. I'm going to go ahead and order these now. Pleasant aromas. Smells like cocos.
Yeah, that's weird. I never heard of that.
Right?
What's the point of that, though? There's no
I didn't pick up on the trivia that they didn't even have actual cigarettes at all until after I watched the movie. Yeah. While watching the movie, I was convinced those kids had cigarettes.
I did too.
Very convinced.
I did too. I didn't remember that either, and it just seemed like, whoa, is that what we did? We were giving kids cigarettes? Whoa.
Here's the first question on Amazon about these nicotine-free cocoa bean cigarettes. Are they vegan? Answer, no.
Really? Really? That's what it says? God.
Yes.
How much Purell comes out of them in the first place?
Yeah, that sounds like the same people is what I was trying to get at. All right. I actually have clips, and they start with this one. This is, I don't know. Oh, this is Corey Feldman's sweet laugh. All right. At least one example of it. Here you go. Makes me want to kill him.
Oh, my God.
Makes me want to murder him. It's terrible.
He's always
That is really bad.
That is so horrible.
I also don't remember them ever saying this, but it feels like something a kid would say today. This feels very current. So here's this.
This is so boss.
This is so boss.
Mm-hmm. Boss. I totally remember that being the phrase.
I don't remember ever hearing it until lately. So like the last few years, I hear kids, like my kids' friends say it. It's like, dude, that is so boss.
It's just making a comeback. They're bringing it back,
I
Scott.
I guess so, yeah. But today it means you got to hit it 3 times before it dies and you move on to the next one. all right.
This is pretty mini boss.
Yeah, this is pretty mini boss. I like that, actually. All right, wait till you hear this, it says. Oh, that's what he says.
Wait to hear this. Wait to hear this.
Wait to hear this. Wait to hear this. I just like Jerry O'Connell flipping out. Mm-hmm. I've never heard this phrase before, so here's Will Wheaton saying something new.
You want to be the Lone Ranger or the Cisco Kid? Jesus.
Walking, talking, Jesus.
Walking, talking, Jesus. Yeah. On the third day.
You just got to trust that some of the people making the movie were 12 years old in 1959.
Yeah.
I swear this is something we said. I promise you.
It feels very Stephen King to me. That's the thing he would write. Okay. Here's Will Wheaton firing a gun, which you would never see today because he's adamantly anti guns. But he would do that there in the movie. Here is some angry Wesley acting.
Give it to me. Come on, man, that's mine.
Oh gosh, dang.
Yeah, I felt really bad about the whole hat thing. Like that feels like a thing that never got resolved for me is the hat in the bucket.
Yeah, the hat in the bucket, and then this almost poking your cigarette eye thing. I don't like any of that. Right. That was
just the fact that that was the thing that his brother gave to him. The one of the only things his brother gave to him, last thing he got from his brother, and he never got that back.
The sweet little Gross Point Blank hat. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. It is, isn't it? Didn't he wear a New York Mets
something like
or
that.
Yankees? Yeah, not Mets. Yankees hat?
Something like that. I want to watch that movie. Yeah, I think about that movie all the time, by the way. I think that's my coming of age movie. Gross Point Blank. All right, Sweary Kiefer. Here's a Sweary Kiefer.
Why don't you tell me something I don't know, asshole?
Yeah. Why don't you? Doesn't sound like him, does it?
No, it doesn't. He's way young.
Like Jack Bauer. Yeah. Here's something we used to say when we were kids.
Oh, it's so funny. I forgot to laugh.
Now, I ask you this. Did we say that as kids or as teenagers because of this movie? Or was that a thing people already said?
There was a lot of things in this movie that I was trying to source. I was like, oh, did I say that before this movie? Or was that a reflection of what we were saying? Yeah. I couldn't. It's really hard to say.
Couldn't remember either. Here's another. Oh, no, wait. Here's a Gucci reference. Okay. Here you go.
And that's a Gucci.
All right. Another Feldman laugh. Oh, my gosh.
Jeez.
Wow.
It's a Crypt-Keeper from HBO.
I was about to say. He sounds like that or a witch. One of the two.
Yeah. To me, it sounds like a 13-year-old trying to fake a laugh. Yeah, it's so bad.
It's really bad.
I don't know. Again, another phrase that maybe we got it from the movie. Here you go.
Oh, Gordy just screwed the pooch.
I heard that phrase before this movie
did
as
you?
Well.
Screwed the pooch.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah. Like some phrases were just being spoken in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s.
All right.
But like, oh my gosh, his voice was driving me crazy.
Yeah.
In those sequences, I really did. I just hated that little jerk.
Origin. I'm looking up Screwed the Pooch origin. Mm.
Don't have image search on.
Here we go. Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Right. That's a good boy.
Let's see here. The right stuff. Oh. Okay, and we're starting. Okay, I got to skip. Man, they got a 9,000 word essay on this. Wonder before really turns this. Never know. Like, we'll never know for sure. Oh, great. The whole thing ends with, we'll never really know for sure. Well, F you, article. That's stupid.
This article is now a waste of your time. Completely. Congratulations.
Here's, what did he call him?
You little tin weasel, Peckerwood loony son.
Tin weasel. I was looking up a lot of stuff during this movie.
Tin like, weasel.
Tin weasel? It's like, what is that?
What if Vin Diesel as a name is meant to evoke that?
That's pretty good. Let's play it. Let's hear it again.
You little tin weasel.
Yeah, definitely tin with a T. It's too bad. Yeah, but, you little Vin Diesel.
You little Vin Diesel Peckerwood.
Car driving triple X jerk face.
Fast
and furious and
30
shut
seconds.
Up.
Jerk. Here's my dog. You want your balls. Right. What's this? Oh, this is something.
Would you hold still? You're making me fuck up the snake part.
Oh, yeah. The guy doing the tattoo.
Scar-tos, man. I need me a scar-too.
Yeah, is that a thing? People do those?
Oh, yes, that's a thing.
Yeah. They used to, yeah.
Why would you do that?
They still do around here,
do they,
man.
Really? Oh, my God.
Why? Couldn't you just go get a real tattoo? What's the problem?
No, what are you talking about?
It's too cheap.
You certainly couldn't at age 12 in 1959. Right.
I guess so. Well, these guys were like 17 or 18.
Yeah, they're guys older, but still, I mean, that's money. This is a poor town, man. Yeah. Poor town.
Probably doesn't even have a tattoo shop in Castle Rock.
Right, and next week, most of those kids die for tetanus from those rusty razors they were.
Rusty Razors. He's my favorite vaudeville comedian. He was fantastic, Rusty Razors. Remember him?
I love how you said it the very next week.
Yeah.
A week later.
Rusty Razors, ladies and gentlemen.
Rusty Razors. Give it up for Rusty Razors.
Playing at the Flamingo all week.
All right, here's a great... I'm going to do this next time someone says this to me. Here you go.
Bullshit. Bull true.
Bull true.
Bull true. True.
Worst ever.
Yeah, that's stupid.
That's basically what is it? The Get Out. I'm out.
Yeah. Or bull false would have been easier to say bull true, too. Because bullshit...
Well, that would be the opposite, though.
Well, then what do you say? Opposite would be bullshit, and you'd say bull constipated.
Bull factual.
Bull toilet.
Bull clean. Bull clean. Bull freshly... douched. I don't know.
Evacuated.
Yeah.
Bowels.
Bull flushed.
Bull flushed. Bull hasn't gone in 3 days. Bull constipated. All right. Here's a train. Oh, yeah. Hold your ears, Randy. This might be a little loud.
Thank you.
All right.
Train!
There you go. Train.
Wow.
Train.
When asked his favorite band, Brian said.
Train!
All right. What's nice. What is he saying I wrote here?
Yes, Davey.
Davey.
What part of the movie is that from?
I don't remember. Hold on.
Yes, Davey.
Oh, it's when the guy calls him lardass as he's introducing him to get on stage.
Oh, right.
And he says, step right up here, lardass. We can hear him, Davey.
Yeah. I love how that sounds.
Yes, Davey.
Wow. Wow.
That's pretty good.
Oh, that's horrendous.
What's this? Oh, same guy.
Same thing. Who cares?
Good. Yeah, you can replace some of my laughs on TMS with that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Boom. Boom Baba.
Boom Baba. Boom Baba.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or the Royal Order of the Antelope or whatever.
Whatever they were, yeah. Ladies Auxiliary pukes on their antlers.
That was great.
It is so... Stephen King's story within a story to have all of these weird tropey, like the twins and the ladies auxiliary and the,
they love that. Well, he loves that stuff.
You know, and you can really tell that this is in the middle of an evolution of filmmaking because like I came away from this thinking, wow, PG rated, Quentin Tarantino, like the whole, like the, he borrows from and evolves these things where you stop and have people talk about things that have nothing to do with the plot.
Sure. You know? Well, it is R, but yes, I get you. I take your point.
Okay, it's R-rated, but compared to Quentin Tarantino,
yeah.
If we're on the it's R light.
If we're on the relative scale, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Here's something about a grandmother. I don't remember.
You guys were acting like my grandmother having a conniption fit. I don't see your problem.
This is another thing my parents said a lot. Quit having a conniption fit.
Conniption fit. Yeah, I don't even know what a conniption fit is.
That's another. Brian Dunaway, look at that one, will you?
Conniption.
Find that
guys
one.
Guys were acting like my grandmother having a conniption fit.
I didn't mean to click that.
I don't see your problem.
Jeez. Holy crap. Play twice, why don't you? All right, how about this one? This dialogue still holds up.
Maybe he's dead.
He's not dead. He's still breathing, you idiot.
Well, I don't know.
I like that exchange.
What was that about?
It's when it was Jerry O'Connell was like...
Oh, right.
Yeah, confused there.
He's still breathing.
Now, let's bring this one back. Here's a term we want to bring back.
You let him beat you, you cock knocker.
Cock knockers.
Cock knockers.
God, I forgot about that word.
Never heard of that, but that laugh. Oh, gosh.
Actually, that term, cock knocker, is probably used a dozen times in 5 seasons of Archer.
Is it really? Never, yeah. I don't
like
watch
every
so
term, everything that Pam could ever put together.
Huh. Cock knocker.
Right.
All right.
Conniption cock knocker. Behavior that shows that you are suddenly very angry, upset. So a conniption fit is sudden onset of anger.
Oh,
and
okay.
Irrational.
So conniption is the sudden onset part.
Right.
Okay. How about cock knocker?
Cock knocker. Let's see.
Was it another famous
Stephen
King book?
Of knocking. Oh.
Tommy Cock Knockers? No?
Right.
Okay. That was a terrible reference.
Feed that cat, Dunaway.
Right? What the hell?
That's a Stephen King
conversation. Get any
cats automatically whine when Stephen King is invoked. anyway, that guy rules. All right. We're going to now move on to Will Wheaton crying. Here you go.
Terrible. Now I see why I never cried.
Out of context, that is probably the most hilarious thing ever.
It's pretty good. I don't even know what he said.
It's melodical.
Yeah. He's like that guy.
Wesley, get off the bench, you piece of shit.
Everybody does cry, by the way. I don't understand exactly what the representation was of it, but everybody does cry eventually, all four of them, including...
Yeah, it's what they needed to get out.
Yeah.
That they couldn't in their regular home life.
That's right. Wesley, go to your quarters.
Wow.
Okay, what's this? I wrote, oh, Billy. Okay, whatever that is. Here you go.
Oh, Billy, I think I just turned my Fruit of the Looms into a fudge factory.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible. All right, great. How about this one?
You ain't got the sack to shoot a woodchuck.
Never heard that one either.
Yeah, me either.
You ain't got the sack to shoot a woodchuck. Say that fast.
Shoot a woodchuck. The poor little woodchucks are so cute and
cuddly.
You don't have the sack to shoot a woodchuck. Shouldn't shoot a woodchuck with a
shoot
sack wood.
How many sacks could a woodchuck sack if a woodchuck
could
shoot
sack
sacks?
Wood. Oh. Pretty close. That thus endeth your thing. Now's the checklist. All right. The checklist, according to the Home Office, where did it go? There it is. No swearing kids? Check. No black people? Check. Jerry O'Connell does not look like that anymore? Check.
None of them do.
None of them do.
River Phoenix?
You don't think so?
Like
I think Will Wheaton kind of looks like Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
I never found it. The whole movie, I'm just like, wow, except for Corey Feldman. These guys really changed.
Oh, yeah. Corey Feldman looks exactly the same.
And the dad looks the same.
Yeah. He does.
I mean, in everything, in Total Recall and
he had a nice
Starship Troopers.
He had a nice scar on his face, didn't he, there?
Jeez, yeah.
That's pretty gnarly. All right, Star Trek connections. We have a few. Will Wheaton was in this movie. He played Gordy.
Wheaton, you say?
Yeah. Oh. How weird. Wesley Crusher, of course. Monty Westmore, he was a makeup artist on this film. He was also a makeup artist on First Contact, Insurrection, and brother of TNG makeup artist Michael Westmore. And then finally...
Face-off guy.
Yeah, face-off guy. Face-off. Dick Durock. That's a great name.
Yes.
after porn work became Bill Travis.
After porn work.
he played the Elysian guard in the TOS episode Elaine of Troy. Sorry, however the hell you say
His name is Durok, and he didn't play a Klingon. That's just sad.
I know, yeah, right? Missed opportunity.
Durok. He should have just been a character with his own name.
Yeah, he would have been without. House of Durok. You think he would have been without honor, Ibbot? Probably.
He would have absolutely been without honor. Dick Durok, you are without honor.
Soundtrack, I'm going to give it an HU for Holds Up. I think it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I got a little tired.
I would give it from the 50s, for appropriate.
So. You didn't
I got a little tired of the song Stand By Me. A little tired.
Oh, you mean just like the little stinger music they just do?
I had enough of it.
You sound like you were doing the
Brady. The Brady Bunch?
Yeah. Establishing outside house shot.
Same thing for me and freaking Brady Bunch for sure.
Yeah. All right. I think my favorite of those transition-y kind of things for sitcoms or TV shows is obviously the knowing ironic use of it in South Park. I just love the before they start a scene. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
This movie all the way through had the kids were singing theme songs to TV shows from that time period. Did y'all sing stuff like that when y'all would go on a little quest?
Oh, yeah. Friends?
Oh, sure.
Would you sing like Three's Company? That was a different group of 13-year-olds.
You take the good, you take the bad.
Yeah, all the time. All the time. I feel like there was some of that, but I can't remember. I can't get specific. Maybe it was just more music. Like,
I loved how they finally pull off their plan early in the film. They pull off their plan to go out of town together, and it cuts to them walking along the railroad track singing the theme from Paladin. That was just awesome.
Yeah. Paladin, dude. That was a cowboy thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to watch Paladin now. I don't even know what the hell it is. All right, look at this. In my hands, the alternate titles. It's either Purple Barf Bonanza or Jack Bauer is sure a dick in this.
Hold on.
24.
Yeah.
Hold on. I feel like such an idiot. The Paladin song was for the show Have Gun Will Travel.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do not email me.
Yeah. Hold your typing.
Well, I didn't think that was misspoken.
Okay. Yeah. All right. The way you said it, I think still came across as it was a Western and not that the show was called Paladin. So I think you're fine.
The main character was called Paladin.
Yeah. Which is dumb. Okay, I wonder if he's
got that. He's got a lot of pain.
He had holy light, used a hammer a lot. It's fine.
They called him Pally for sure.
Yeah, Pally. Hey, Pally. Got an email here. Oh, wait. Did we not do
we didn't do our tweets.
Yeah, why didn't I do that yet? Oh, because I don't know why I didn't. It's a Twitter post time. It's where 140 characters or less, you guys sum up the film in the way only you know how. Let's start with Randy.
Stand By Me. Lil Wheaton survives a quest with no quest giver, no point of interest, no reward, and no turn-in. This film needs a player score system.
I agree, dude. Need some more progression.
Figure two enters the game.
Did you call him Lil Wheaton?
Lil Wheaton.
I love it.
That was brilliant. Brian Dunaway.
Stand By Me like Patrick Beja knocking up my cat and knocking over my trash. At first I'd be pissed, but then I would have Beja kitties to cuddle.
You're making a reference to how do you know a Frenchman's been in your backyard joke?
Yeah, that's right. All right.
That's pretty good.
What's your tweet in the first minute?
Take that, Patrick. Really, really. Then
you
finally,
know I'm French, right?
Yeah, of course. Brian Dibbitt.
Dibbitt. Stand By Me. Stephen King takes us back to the time when he was younger and sold beef jerky to a kid that one time.
Nicely done.
Le Dick.
Nope, I thought that was a Patrick thing. Sorry. That was a Terpster thing. All right. Where are we now? Let's do an email. We got an email from, who is this? This is from Chris, who wrote in. Not Chris in the movie, but Chris. It says, hi, Scotts, Brian's, and Randy. Listening to your Super Cop episode recently. Did we do Super Cop? Yeah, I guess we did. And Ibbot said, I guess we did. And Ibbot said in his Twitter post that Super Cop was the best live action cartoon he'd ever seen. I beg to differ. There is a movie called The Villain, a.k.a. Cactus Jack, a 1979 Hal Needham film, Cannonball Run, Smokey the Bandit, that guy, starring Kirk Douglas, or although he wrote Kirk Douglid, Anne Margaret, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. He spelled Schwarzenegger right, but couldn't get Douglas right.
Paul Lind, if I remember, if I'm thinking of the same thing.
Oh, you might be. He says, the plot is a handsome stranger has agreed to escort Charming Jones to collect her inheritance from her father, Charming Jones. But Avery Simpson wants the money and hires notorious outlaw Cactus Jack to ambush Charming. However, Cactus Jack is not very good at robbing people. Kirk Douglas Character is like a live-action Wile E. Coyote, and Arnold is the Roadrunner. If you can find it streaming, it is worth sacking, even if it's a comedy. Your friend Chris, not the Coldplay dude, Martin, he says.
Mm. Okay. Chris, the Coldplay dude would say that.
Yeah. That's the
problem. Yeah, that's something you totally would say.
Sure, Clark Kent. We know you're not Superman. I've never heard of that movie. That sounds all right. But
I had to find the trailer for this one. But
I don't remember the Super Cop reference being a great live action cartoon, though. You must have said something, and I just don't remember you saying it back in the day. Is that true, Ibbet? I don't remember.
What's that? Talking about Super Cop being,
remember that time on FilmSack episode 232.
Exactly. I don't doubt that I said that, and I probably still stand behind it.
You remember in 2010, when iPads weighed 6,000 pounds? That was a long time ago.
We'll have to watch the trailer after this, because that's the Paul Lynn thing is just the fact that he narrates the entire trailer.
Oh, okay.
But I had no idea Arnold Schwarzenegger was in this.
Yeah, that's weird.
There he is. Yeah, Paul Lynn plays Nervous Elk.
Nervous Elk.
That's his character name.
How old is this?
Oh, very. 1979. Oh,
that sounds all right.
Nice boob shot. And offensive Margaret. References to Indians.
Yeah, it's like a low rent Blazing Saddles from what I remember.
Okay. That sounds perfect for us. Let's do it. Our next film is not a film. It is yet another week where someone is on is traveling. So we're going to be using our time to watch a doubleheader, which only equals to about 40 minutes total. But we're going to be watching Goosebumps by the request of 90s boy Brian Dunaway over here.
90s, baby!
He is fond. You have fond memories of that show. And so we're going to watch a two-parter that you think is worthy of live sacking.
And you got to understand, you think is worthy of live sacking after 2 weeks ago, we did the worst episode of a TV show I've ever seen.
Yeah. Which one?
Which one was it? Oh, Quantum Leap, yeah.
I'm just putting that out there. Brian is aiming really low.
Yeah. Also, Randy, you're a Time Lord, and you know why. I'm not going to explain, but you are a freaking Time Lord today. That was amazing what you just did. The math you just did, I couldn't do in my head. So nice job. You're funny. Anyway, be watching for that. That's going to do it for us. This long episode, which I am glad we had, because I love the movies like this that just make us go on for hours. So I hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll be back next week again with Goosebumps. The website is filmsack.com. Voicemails are easy to send to us, and we'll play them here on the show if you send them, 801-471-0462. You can email us, filmsack@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter @filmsack, and leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Ryan, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yeah.
See you next time.
Scroat leeches.
Muskroat.
I don't give a shit.
Ah, damn it. I hit it wrong again. Why is that there?
I know, that's always the one you accidentally go to. Shit. What, did you get it mislabeled or something?
It's right here.
Frick.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
It's because I have it set as K on my soundboard on every other show I do, except this one, and it's I don't give a shit is on K, so I keep hitting it wrong. All right.